Oftentimes, it's better to start with creativity to help you learn the facts.
Life is too short to learn a list of 1,000 rando words.
From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In with your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, and I'm with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, dean of the Graduate School of Education. And I should clarify that we are actually not together at this time. We are sheltering in place. Dan is on a video screen in front of me, and our guest will be also Zooming in. So we are following the rules of the government, Dan.
I would say you look very good on the screen.
Oh, thank you.
You've developed a screen persona. I am in a ratty t-shirt and haven't shaved in like 6 years. So Dr. Denise, political leadership Pope.
I'm not in political leadership right now.
No, but I'm about to drag you in.
Okay.
No, so have I told you why I'm responsible for coronavirus?
Oh, gosh, Dan, that is not a good thing to say
out
loud.
I know. Everybody is trying. If you're very low in control, you're trying to find something to blame or give responsibility for. And I'm going to take it on.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Tell us why.
So go ahead. You know, find my heavy social media presence and let me have it. But So I as dean, I go through a reappointment process. And I get reappointed as dean, and I'm mentioning to the faculty that I got reappointed and how lucky I am that in my first term as dean, I never had a crisis.
Oh,
I forgot to knock on wood.
Yes.
Knock on wood. And 2 weeks later, this started. So it's my fault.
You are to blame fully for the coronavirus.
But I was right. Leadership in crisis is very different than a period of visioning and strategizing.
You really put people to the test. You put your leaders to the test in a crisis.
Well, so I don't know if the same leader is good at all of them.
Mm.
We'll find out, right? So you have these decisions like short-term survival, along with kind of historical obligations that you've already incurred, and then that you're pitting that against long-term opportunities in the new normal.
Yeah.
And so how do you navigate this? So imagine there's three time frames.
Okay.
There's right now. There's the reentry, let's say the fall for schools. And then there's the future. So what percentage of mind share do you give to each of these? Like survival versus preparing for the short term versus preparing for the long term?
Well, it's a good question, but I think the first one, if you botch the first one, you're not going to survive. So to me, that at that time, at that juncture, you need to do a lot of thinking around that. Just, okay, schools are closing. Kids need to be fed. Kids need to be safe. Teachers need to figure out how to balance work, life, childcare, all that. So I would do, right now gets a little bit heavier share of the mind share. But I do know, talking to superintendents, that many of them, now that we're kind of 6, 7, what are we, 8 weeks in? I don't even know. Now they're thinking about the fall. I don't know how many of them are thinking about the future. I think right now it's present and fall that are getting like the most mind share. That's just from my, talking with people.
You think 70% now, 25% fall, 5% long-term future, or people are making budgets right now?
I know. This is the problem.
Fall may be bigger.
I know. Well, and also now is a little bit different because now you're sort of past the original house on fire. We have to get kids fed. Now people have systems in place and you're starting to think, okay, I can wrap my head a little bit more around not now. I mean, what do you think? What would your ideal percentage be? What are you doing as a dean?
Right. So I think I'm transitioning out of the period of making lots and lots and lots of decisions. You know, new issues come up and making decisions sort of every day, doing the best you can. You know, I sort of have a list and I think I've made 20 major decisions.
Wow.
About things. Now the decision is how next year the budget cut and how do we establish a teaching that captures some of the qualities of a residential experience, even though you're online.
Right.
And so that's a little more planful as opposed to reacting. And then the long-term future, I have rainbows and butterflies, and that's about as well defined as it is.
Okay, so a half a percentage point on the future.
But when I give motivational speeches, I really count on that half a percentage point.
Okay, well, that's part of being a leader too, so that's good.
So we're very fortunate to have someone who really does understand governance and financing in education in California, especially. This is Heather Huff. She's the executive director of PACE, which stands for Policy Analysis for California Education. This is a research and policy center that's based at Stanford, but it is a consortium of scholars from USC, University of California, Berkeley, and University of California, Davis. And so her recent work, or her sort of recent work, was focusing on using research to strengthen state structures and continuous improvement. I imagine her recent work is also how do we stop the ship from sinking, but I don't know. So Heather, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what is your sense of the mind share right now of political leadership in California?
My read on the situation is very similar to what you were discussing. I think this came upon us so quickly that there was a period of weeks, and I think many of us are still in this period in California, where it was, what is this? How do I begin to think about how to respond to immediate needs? And some of those are, how do we keep kids fed? How do we make sure that kids have computers at home? How do we train teachers to do the most basic of tasks, like log on to a Zoom? These are all things that weren't part of their world before. And now that we are looking toward the fall, and that's seemingly closer, I do feel like people are starting to look toward that time. The problem is that there is still so much uncertainty about what the fall holds. So every day is a new crisis, a new piece of information that needs to be solved, with then new questions about how those decisions should be made.
So do they do scenario planning? They say, okay, let's choose three scenarios and then plan around them. You know, one scenario is schools will stay closed. Another scenario is split attendance, so you have less kids on campus. Is that how they go about it?
That's right. So those conversations right now in California are happening in earnest, but they've only been happening for a very short time in the grand scheme of things. But they are working on there's three buckets of scenarios. We go back to school full time, we don't go back to school at all, or we have some hybrid. But within that hybrid, there are so many options. Some of the ideas that are being thrown out are AM, PM schedules, 1 week on, 1 week off, 2 days on, 2 days off. And that's incredibly difficult for folks to plan for at the local level. I mean, if you think through the logistics of each one of those options, it's things like Wi-Fi and computers, but also sanitation, food services, the number of instructional staff. And then you throw into that we have complete uncertainty about what school district budgets will look like. So what's being presented to leaders is design for a world that we can't understand right now, build these various scenarios, all of which are likely more expensive than what you were doing before, but try to cut costs.
Okay, yeah. So my pulse rate just went up about 50%. who makes these decisions? Right? Does the governor say this is the way it's going to be and everybody follows it, or there's a state legislature, or does the California just say, here's your money, this is how much you get? So I do not understand power dynamics in California.
Well, here in California, our state policymakers are very eager to assert we are a local control state. The ways that we distribute funds leaves a lot of flexibility to the local level to decide how those funds are used. But that doesn't mean there isn't state level policy. And I think a great example of this is the policy that came from the governor, from the state superintendent of public instruction around distance learning. They put out a statement, a requirement that while students are not in school, districts have to provide some kind of distance learning. They didn't specify much about what exactly that looks like. So the general framework was set, and then that was put to each district to negotiate locally with their teachers' union and with various stakeholders. So what ends up happening in a local control state is that you see really wide variation in terms of what that ends up looking like. And some of that variation, I think it could be argued, is necessary for local context. Here in California, we have extremely dense urban environments. We also have very rural environments where people live hundreds of miles apart, even in the same district. So some of that variation, I think, is necessary. And the ideas around flexibility are to support that. But then some of it is questionable, and I think brings us to the question about how we can guarantee quality while also allowing for flexibility. Some recent research showed that that there's really wide variation in terms of how quickly districts were teaching students virtually, and also in terms of what distance learning means, how much of that is real instruction versus delivery of resources.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We are talking with Heather Huff, a policy expert on education, particularly in California, about all the decisions that have to be made during this crisis and the unknown of what's going to happen in the fall in a really diverse state with lots of different kids with lots of different needs.
So just to go back a little bit, at some point we need to find out, does anybody have any principles for making decisions? But before we get there, the California's state level guidance was you need to do distance learning, and that was it? I mean, There must have been more to it. It must be certain amount of student contact hours or something. Or was it really just you must do distance learning?
There were not very specific guidelines that were set into law about what districts had to provide. Subsequently, there were training memos, there was guidance that was put out about what this could look like, but the letter of the law left a lot of flexibility to the local level.
Wow.
Which is not surprising given how schools usually operate, right? I mean, the schools usually operate at the local level. So, but what's been shocking to me is at the local level, how different the experiences are. You could have one school in, doing something, and then 10 miles away, a completely different experience is happening where they're just getting packets and no teachers are going online because the union said, you can't ask our teachers to go online. But this district, which is like across the street, you know, is doing something totally different. How does that work, Heather?
Well, it happened exactly the way that you might think, that when you're negotiating these agreements in 1,000 districts, in places where there were really strong labor management relations and a shared commitment to quality or a vision of what curriculum and instruction looks like, they were able to more quickly make plans that accelerated the types of work and learning that teachers needed to do. And in places where those relationships have not been established, going to the table and talking about this incredible change didn't go very well. So we've all seen examples, I'm sure, in the news about places that weren't able to find agreements, where the bar is very low of what is required of teachers, because that trust wasn't there and the teachers' union and the management weren't able to develop something that's really robust and ultimately that serves kids.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We're talking with Heather Huff about the difficulties of planning and you know, you do have to go to the table and get the union to agree and get the teachers to agree. And And then you have the parents who are really upset that their kids are either getting too much or not enough. It kind of feels like if you're a leader, you're not going to be able to please everybody. I guess, is that something that is like a no duh?
It certainly seems to be true. I think that as a parent, I have two public school children. And as a parent, I feel that tension all the time. And you read in the media, all of the parents that I talk to are feeling that tension. I want more for my kid, but I can't administer more. And I think that's the heart of this incredible challenge that we're all facing, is that I think that this isn't a problem that we've ever been asked to solve before as a community. And so a lot of what's happening is best attempts at addressing it. And I think a great example of this is serving students with special needs. So as all students went out of physical spaces, the students that have had the hardest time in this transition are the students who were receiving special ed services, the students who were learning English or needed targeted types of supports. There isn't a good literature or practice base about what kinds of things those kids can get in a virtual setting that really helps them to continue accelerating their learning. And in that context, it's been very difficult for districts to navigate. And some of them have asked very specifically for concrete guidance from the state because they say, we don't know what to do. And we're afraid that if we do it the wrong way, we're going to spend years in litigation. So instead of us trying to invent this in 1,000 places, 1,000 different ways, it might be helpful if you told us what you thought we should do so that we could then invest in implementing rather than designing in this context with so much uncertainty.
So did they do that? I mean, are people getting the guidance around special ed?
They're not getting the guidance that they want. Mm.
Right.
So again, our state has provided resources, webinars, training, so more has come out. But that doesn't give districts the kind of cover that they want around requirements to be able to say, we're doing what's required of us. And so this isn't something that we can negotiate. And it's also not something that we're trying to protect ourselves against.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. You want to be very innovative, but your innovations may lead to a lawsuit. That's a scary prospect. It's a quick way to shut down creativity.
Yeah, well, I think that this crisis has, for many across California, really highlighted a fundamental tension between centralized control and local control. Because there are some things that centralized decision-making is helpful for, either because the stakes are so high, and I think that's true in this case. For a period of time at the beginning, there was no directive to shut schools. And so some schools were closed, some weren't, and it was an ongoing source of confusion and also tension. So that's a place where many thought, isn't this an area where the state could say, let's close schools, blanket decision. But I think that there's a lot of ways in which centralized decision making also improves economies of scale in a setting like this where the answer isn't known. And sometimes the flexibility is a burden because now you have everybody across the state trying to design for the best option instead of trying to implement what's already a very complex set of solutions.
Yes, it makes my head swim. Right? It's mind-boggling. Well, we will come back and talk more with Heather Hoff about what's going on, particularly in California, but really schools all across the nation as leaders grapple with making some very tough decisions now and thinking about the fall. This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We'll have more next on Sirius XM.
You're listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
So it is hard to predict what the future will be.
The focus is really on academics.
From the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Heather Huff, who is an education policy expert, about all the different decisions that the schools have to make, and really the split we see between local control, what a superintendent, what a principal can decide, versus what is decided at the state level and the federal level. And Heather, it just became really obvious to me in the first part of the show that there's a parallel here with what we're seeing the governors going through with, you know, the president, and the call for some oversight. And can you please put out the call for us to get, you know, personal protective equipment so that we don't have to go into a free-for-all? Am I right in saying that there's a parallel there?
Yeah, I absolutely think there's a parallel there. In the same way that it's hard for any one state or city to have the social standing or the purchasing power to make these big policy decisions, that's true for districts in California as well, particularly for smaller districts. And I think there's an even more important thing to think about, which is this issue of economies of scale, that the development of new things is very costly. And so if you can centralize the development of things, then you're pooling those resources in a way that's best. There is a great example recently of Kern County, which is a big Southern California county. They pulled together all of their districts to design what their distance learning platforms would look like and their approach, which means that for all of those districts, students had the same login, the same materials, the same approaches. That's very unique across the state. In most places, we saw individual districts developing those things for themselves.
Or even individual teachers. I have a friend who has a kindergartner with 5 different logins in kindergarten. I mean, crazy, within the same school. Yeah.
Right.
So let's talk money. So our school budgets are going to go down. Why is that?
There is very good reason to expect that school budgets will go down, not just here in California, but everywhere. Education is a slice of an overall funding pie toward all public services in California. And essentially, the way to think about it is that when the economy is not doing well, when people are out of work, that pie gets smaller because people aren't generating income, they're losing money in the stock market. And so the slice that is allocated to education is expected to get smaller as well. The real big question here is by how much? And it's a very difficult question to answer because of the way that the pandemic has played out economically. We know that taxes were pushed back from April to July, which means that here in California and everywhere, state policymakers don't actually know how much money they're going to have to allocate to public services. And it's a really big issue here in California, where the way that the budget works, the governor puts out a draft budget in January that says, here's what we're expecting based on a relatively stable projection of funding. And here's what we're saying right now is how we're going to spend that money. And over the period between January and May, when a revised budget is put out, stakeholders talk about those investments, they're iterated upon, they're made more detailed. What happened here now is that all of those proposals are off the table now. And what's going to be put out in May as a revision is likely to be pretty far from what the actual budget will be, because we still don't know the size of that pie.
So ambiguity forever.
Forever, Dan.
Not forever. And we can look back at what's happened in the past to try to develop a pretty good sense, or at least a more educated guess, of what it might look like, because we have been through recessions before. I think there are many reasons to believe that this economic impact will be worse than what we've experienced in the past. But we had some experts with PACE recently say that we might be looking at around a 15% reduction in funds as a result of this crisis. And that might be a good goalpost for districts to be thinking about when they consider what types of programs and services they might need to cut.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're talking with Heather Huff, a policy expert, about all the different decisions that the California schools need to make, particularly because of the severe budget cuts that we're expecting and the real learning loss. So I think there's a bunch of parents out there, Heather, who are really worried about what you just said. And should they hold their kid back for a year? Should they? I mean, what should a parent do given that? Or should we trust the schools are going to handle it?
Well, I think that many educators are asking those same questions. The range of proposals that's been put on the table is really wide at this point. So some of, I've heard ideas such as every student gets held back 1 year and all of the same material is retaught. Those, I think, are more outlier ideas. But schools are also talking about extended day, about summer school. So I think that as a parent, right now we need to be looking at the system and trusting, and I think not just trusting, but investing in helping our schools and districts make those kinds of decisions, because ultimately the schools are there to serve our families and our children's needs. So now is more than ever the time that we need to get involved in those decisions at the local level.
How can someone do that, Heather? Like, what's the best way to do that without being kind of considered the obnoxious parent, right? How do you suggest we go about getting involved?
Well, again, I think there's different layers of involvement. So at the school level there in California, we have school site councils, which are a governing body. That's the place where decisions are made about resource allocation, about staffing, and parents. There are voting members on those councils, but any parent can be involved. So really close to home, talking at that level is critical. And then finding ways to communicate up to the district level. And now it's hard now because everything's virtual. You can't go to a board meeting the same way you might have before. But all of those things have been moved online. And school boards and district leaders, I think, are more eager than ever to hear from their stakeholders.
It seems like a normal thing to be a principal and say we want to limit learning loss.
Well, it's the loss part. Yeah. It's more like limit loss of learning opportunity.
So looking at it with a deficit model, which is how much learning did a particular kid lose, I think is problematic, especially because we know that students may have particular content that needs to be retaught. They may have particular skills. We also know that students are going to have psychological and social emotional needs. So now more than ever, being able to understand those needs in a very concrete way at the student level will enable educators, but also system leaders, to be able to do the kinds of things and make the kinds of investments that are good for all kids.
Thank you so much for being here, Heather, and thank all of you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app, iTunes, and SoundCloud.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope on SiriusXM Business Radio. If you missed any of it, listen on demand, online, or with the SiriusXM app.